under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any agenda changes, additions, or deletions?
Madam President?
Yes?
I would like to point out that you have two things. I have revised the minutes for the hearing on May 30th to correctly reflect the vote on student number 6.
Thank you.
And also, you have a revised item for the resolution on district procedures. There is no change, really, to the item or the process. Just inadvertently, a previous resolution was attached instead of the current one that should be reflected. So a new one has been attached.
Thank you. Any others? Jeremy?
Yeah, we're missing item 8.3.2.1 as part of the consent agenda. It's in another part of the board book, but it's not listed.
8.3.2.1?
Yeah, you'll find it in the other part of the agenda. Items can be discussed, but it's not listed under items to be discussed. I'm referring to approved roofing and solar construction incorporated bid and agreement for the Santa Cruz High School re-roofing project. You'll find it on page 231 of 656, and it's 8.3.2.1, and it's not listed under items to be discussed.
It's 8.5.2.1, and it should be listed under items to discuss.
Mine came in this way.
They just, maybe the person who made the cover accidentally mislabeled the item.
Oh, so it will, it is an item.
It's in there, yeah. But thank you.
I'm so sorry. So 8. We catch that 2 instead of a 5.
To keep
me on point, 8.3.2.1, as we know it, is actually 8.5.2. So in there, thank you. Okay, thank you.
Oh, there it is. Yes, it is 8.5.
Right. Okay, we now have the honor of recognizing our student board representatives. They were amazing this year. I think they gave us a lot of insight and helped us in making our decisions.
So I want to add to Board President Vestal's congratulations and express our gratitude to you for your service. So if I can call you each up one at a time, Genesis. From Harbor High School, we appreciate you. Your voice has been tremendously important to us this year. Thank you for your commitment of time and service to the school experience. Daniela Borland Martinez. Thank you so much for lending your voice and your ideas to our governance team. It's been tremendously helpful to us. Thank you. And Alexandra there, thank you so much. Again, your contributions have made a difference to our governance team and our school district. Thank you. Please consider running for school board sometime in the future.
On the next item, public comments. These are for items that are not on the agenda. Please come forward. Use the microphone, please.
So I'm here tonight on behalf of Safe Schools Project of Santa Cruz County, the Queer Youth Task Force, the Diversity Center of Santa Cruz County, and the Santa Cruz County Board of Supervisors, particularly Ryan Coonerty. It seems like you, the Coonertys, are everywhere.
Yeah.
But I'm speaking for these organizations tonight to honor Eileen Brown, the outgoing assistant superintendent. To say that we're sad to see her go would be a huge understatement. Over the years, Eileen has been a strong, dedicated, and outspoken advocate for LGBT students in the Santa Cruz City Schools. Eileen resurrected the LGBT task force at Santa Cruz City Schools to address LGBT issues in the district. She was a strong supporter of the Prairie View Leadership Awards, an honor which, which LGBT students and their allies are honored every year throughout the county. Eileen always supported sending LGBTQ students to the YES Conference and Youth Empowerment Summit in San Francisco every year. She advocated for gender-neutral bathrooms in all our schools and advocated for our transgender students by supporting gender and trans training for our staff. Eileen updated the district's website to be a relevant and friendly resource for our LGBT students. She was a driving force in the county to have all school districts create a policy for AB 1266 in support of all of our trans students. And it was Eileen who helped to disaggregate information, important information, regarding our LGBT students in the California Healthy Kids Survey. Eileen asked me to survey all the GSAs in our district so that we could better serve and understand their needs and concerns. And finally, she was always there to quickly respond to my many calls and my many emails concerning the needs of our LGBT students, staff, and parents. In the age of superheroes, it has been Santa Cruz City School, she has been Santa Cruz City School's Wonder Woman when it comes to caring and supporting for our LGBT students here at Santa Cruz City Schools. I ordered a cake for her, but it didn't come.
Yeah.
Rumor has it that Marvel is trying to get a hold of her for the next move.
Yeah.
Would you come up here, please?
Also being involved in the elections, maybe support local issues, so things that people can't do while they're teaching, and they're just so maxed out with time that maybe we can do things that are relevant to the community. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Am I allowed to say something?
I would just like to say how proud I am and happy for the work of Dylan thank you.
Okay, is there anyone else who would like to speak at this time? Okay, we'll move on to the superintendent's report.
I'd like to start by acknowledging and congratulating Eileen. Thank you for all of your service. And I want to introduce our new Director of Student Services, who just saw he's got huge shoes to fill. And we want to welcome Greg O'Mara, who's here in the back of the room. Greg, do you mind just standing up so folks can see who you are? And I also want to welcome the new Assistant Superintendent, Dorothy Coito, who's also here with us this evening. I sent you my report because we have a packed agenda tonight. I'm going to go really fast. So We'll get it up there. The last slide that you saw, we had wonderful graduations and completion ceremonies and promotion ceremonies last week, and there's all kinds of people involved in making those happen all over the school sites, including the custodian that helped me, Patty and Molly and I get from the field at Soquel High so we could make the graduation at Santa Cruz High School. Unfortunately, we didn't end up making the Harbor High School graduation because of traffic. But it was a great Bayside kickoff, went wonderfully. This week we've had amazing professional development at the Seymour Center for our K-12 science. Final exams in the secondary all went well. Want to celebrate that the Santa Cruz County College commitment had their counseling professional development this week, and we also just won a $100,000 grant to support ongoing professional development for counseling over the next 2 years. Wonderful retirement reception on May 16th. All kinds of community events. 19 of our students received scholarships from Santa Cruz Rotary on May 11th. The Queer Youth Leadership Awards, which several of you attended, was outstanding event on May 12th. Gala Getza, May 20th. The meeting with SCEF. So all this work with our community partners. And I will leave it at that and thank you all. It's been a good, busy month.
Okay. Board member reports. Deb?
I also like, thank Eileen for, it was a pleasure serving with you as a parent before I was on the board at the Wellness Committee, and I just want to thank you for all the work that you've done to students over the years, and I want to congratulate Allie and Genesis. It was an honor to see you graduate at Harvard and gave great speeches. That's it.
I had a great time at the Bayside day and a half workshop to see all 10 district superintendents in one place at one time with all of their, with many, I should say, assistant soups, curriculum or educational services, with many teachers, with all the science point people. I was just very proud. It was a great time. I'd like to talk to you about it at length at a different time. I'd like to point out three things. There's work being done on vision statements. There's work being done around the issue of agreements around curriculum and professional development to foster science teaching, K-12. And there's work going on around finding time to support professional learning committees, communities, calendar timelines, etc. I think, speaking on behalf of almost 200 people who were in the room, I came away inspired. Where the rubber meets the road is curriculum, and it was just a pleasure to watch people working hard on curriculum. Not to mention the fact that NGSS is very exciting stuff. So, thank you, Chris, for your role in this, and I felt a privilege to be there.
I wanted to applaud all the people involved with the team to make that promotion ceremony, the graduation, just spectacular. And over the years, I've been in a lot of such ceremonies. I think they're always very symbolic of what the school is all about. And the couple that I was able to go to at Galt and at Mission Hill, it really sent the message that our communities are healthy and working together. And you look at administrative staff, you look at teaching staff, you look at the class-wise staff, the kids, the parents, the community volunteers. It was obvious that those, in both of those school communities, those connections are really powerful, and I was extremely honored to be a part of the ceremony, so thank you for making that happen. Also wanted to say hats off to Eileen. I hadn't worked with her too much, but it was very obvious to me from the few reports she gave and the few hearings I was involved with her under her leadership. It was a very exceptional service to this district, so thank you very much. And finally, welcome Greg, welcome Dorothy, and you're coming to a great district, and we're looking forward to working with you as part of these great teams. And we'll miss our student board members, and you set a high standard, so we'll see who comes up next year. Thank you very much.
Genesis, Alexandra, and of course, Danielle has left. Thank you very much. Your student voice really does help shape the policy that we make, because it's nothing but words without the reflection back of how it reaches down to our school site. So thank you. And good luck to you, because I know that there's an exciting time coming in both your lives with your graduation. I'd also like to thank Eileen. Eileen, it's really bittersweet. You helped inform me not only on the board, but as a parent. Because when I came to the district, you were one of the first meetings that was hosted. And when you're a parent of a ninth grader, you think that they're just going to follow suit. But you taught me many things, and I appreciate it. And you really helped open my eyes to seeing the real needs, some of the real needs that are not apparent here for our community of students. I'd like to congratulate Mr. Phillips and Ms. Ann Keys for their AFT work in retirement. And this is wonderful. I think it's a wonderful thing for the community. And I'm happy that they have a voice there on the political piece. I also had the opportunity to attend a People's Democratic Club meeting where Michael Watkins and Martine Watkins were speaking on restorative justice. It was very eye-opening, and I'm happy to know that our district is moving forward. I see in our consent agenda at some of our high schools. And lastly, I had the opportunity to attend three different high school graduations, two comprehensives and AFE. And at the comprehensive high schools, they were wonderfully done. I'm looking forward to maybe getting to Harvard if I can fit one more in or figure out how to get around this county on that busy day. It would be wonderful. But it was very bittersweet. I was saying and shaking the hands of the Soquel students that I've known since they were about 2 years old. I'm seeing some of the Santa Cruz families that have been just multi-generation as my husband's been here. And then lastly, at the AFE, I was very appreciative to be part of a district who understands that there are diverse needs that are being met by alternative means for success. And I believe they had 18 students graduate, and it was really, really a wonderful event. So if anybody has the opportunity next time to do an AFE graduation, it's pretty humbling. I think you might enjoy it. So thanks.
Sheila?
Well, we've been here meeting, but we haven't presented what we've done for a while, so I've got all a little mixed up as to what I've presented and what I haven't. So I'm just going to stay with the latest. I went to three graduations, Westlake, Bayview, and Santa Cruz High. Enjoyed them all, and was struck again by how there's a personality to each one of our schools. And I want to try to see if I can spread out a little more to see some of the schools I haven't gone to, because I was so struck by how you can know a lot about the school by watching how everybody celebrates. Mm-hmm. And they did it very differently. I also went to a career, I think the right name of it is Career Tech Portfolio presentation of the students. Right. And that was also really delightful and informative in terms of the students who are working in our career tech programs, giving presentations of what they have done over time. Mm-hmm. And what, you know, basically they have to tell you, they have to write a description of what they have learned and the steps involved, the kinds of things that they have learned. And then they have to tell you what that has meant to them in terms of their future career. They have to present it. Some of them did it more standing than sitting, always very professional. I could see them going out looking for jobs. I was very impressed. And I was impressed that the person who is the counselor in charge of them does so much, because those kids really had come a long way from, you know, beginning high school to being able to do this. So I wanted to mention that. And then, of course, I want to mention Eileen also. In general, everything that everybody else has said. And I got to go to one meeting with you, and then you left town. but at least I got in there for one. But I had a particular thing that I wanted to have other people know and also to thank you for, which was among the psychologists in town, they had a tremendous interest in the effect of legalizing marijuana on our secondary students. And many of them did not have that much contact with either our schools or public schools. And yet they were trying to find somebody who knew something about this so that they could figure out how, as a community, to learn more. And I suggested they talk to Eileen. And to a person, they came back to me and said, my God, she knew everything. Mm-hmm. She really, and she was willing to talk to us. She did talk to us, and she knew the subject so well. And we're so grateful that you told us. And I was so grateful to have that come back to me as a board representative for our school district, that they'd been looking everywhere, couldn't find anybody, and they found Eileen. So I want to thank you, Eileen, because I think that that kind of thing often happens, where you are doing a really excellent job and you just assume it, and we don't always know it. So thank you. That's it.
Thank you. Well, I submitted my board report to Nancy, but I also want to thank you, Eileen. It was a pleasure working on wellness with you. Next item is approval of the minutes for May 23rd.
Move approval.
Okay, Sheila moves approval. Second?
Second.
And Cindy seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? And then May 30th with the
correction. For
with the correction, yeah.
Move approval.
Second.
Patty and Deb? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstained?
It was the IDPs.
Oh, one abstention.
We'll
two.
Yeah,
okay.
Thank you.
All right. Now the consent agenda. Are there items that trustees would like pulled or for discussion or have a question at this time? Jeremy?
Discussion, please. 8.3.5, 8.3.6, 8.3.10, 8.3.12,
8.3.13. Okay. 5, can you go over those?
8.3.5, 8.3.6, 8.3.10, 8.3.12, 8.3.13. Brief discussion.
Okay, are there other items that trustees have questions about?
I want to be clear, Madam President. Are you just want to ask questions about those, or do you want them pulled for a separate vote?
Questions.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Just on 8.3.9.
8.3.9 for Patty. And is that question or pull?
Just a question on it.
Okay. And Sheila?
You didn't mention comment, but I just wanted to pull for comment 8.1.11.
8.1.11.
Oh, the annual report from PTA?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we will go ahead and start with the comments.
It's actually a comment and a question. I wanted to make sure that we highlighted this. This is a brand new parcel tax oversight committee. And I appreciated having the report, and I appreciated that the report indicated that things had gone quite well. And I was hoping that maybe Pat would have a word about that. But also, do they consider, or do we ask them to come and present to us themselves, or do we not do that usually?
This is a huge agenda tonight, and...
But normally we would?
We have had them come before, and it doesn't have to be. It can be either through in writing or through this. But.
Okay.
I would just share with the board that did go really well. Definitely very involved, very interested, very supportive, complimentary of the district, too. The programs, the effect that it has. I certainly think there's a willingness of the committee to come and present to you if you're so inclined. What I would share with you too, I share with the superintendent, what they were also interested in as well is that in the past, the information report itself had been shared with the Santa Cruz Sentinel. So they talked about making sure, because it is very positive, and we do need, we want to acknowledge the community support and the positive report that the committee had. They'd like that information to be publicized. They asked us to consider sharing the report with the Sentinel. I've talked to the superintendent as well with information that's going out to the community in the form of flyers and other communications, that we include comments from the committee as well to reassure and to, that's not right, but to also just share with the community at large that it has been reviewed, that, you know, all the positive things they shared in the report.
And we did do a thank you in the facilities email brief we sent out about parcel taxes.
Are we also still thinking of doing this, the Sentinel, or did we decide this was better?
Well, we put something out in the facilities release. I thought they wanted a thank you sent out. I didn't realize that they were asking for the report sent. We could send it.
I can go back into my notes, Chris, but I think it's we can go back and take a look.
Exactly. I'm just thinking historically there were some presentations before, so it might be nice to.
I certainly think they'd be more than willing to do that shit. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And then, Jeremy, you had a question.
Yeah, 8.3.5 is a $200,000 error on the vendor's side, and 8.3.6, there's a $300,000 error on the vendor's side, so that's $500,000. We signed a contract, and now they're asking us to pay another $500,000 because they didn't do their addition correctly. I'm wondering, did we meet them halfway? I mean, you know, we gave them the bid because it's the lowest bid process, right?
Well, this but is
materials.
Let me just say, so
thank you. I was hoping you would take two.
The bid is done by through the CMAS process, through the state government. So this is a CMAS purchase of materials. So they gave us a list of the materials and a list of all the prices. And somewhere in their spreadsheet, which they did this against the PDF, there was a bust and it didn't add up right. So all the line items are there and all the dollar amounts are there. It's just the addition at the bottom doesn't add up. So from a legal standpoint, we've agreed to purchase all these items at all these different prices, and just because the bottom doesn't add up, we have a choice. We can say either we'll pay the corrected one, we can try to negotiate, probably unsuccessfully, or we say no, but we need the materials. We've actually taken to putting it on our own spreadsheets now because that's shouldn't happen like that. But
no.
Unfortunately, it did.
Right.
Okay, Patty.
So my question to that is, within that CMAS purchasing agreement, does anybody else offer those materials, or do we have to continue to buy from this particular company because we have over $1 million coming on the next roof and the next roof and the next roof? And that's a question that came up in the pool area, is if you design it a specific way, then you can only buy a specific piece, and it really isn't a cost-effective measure if there is something equally as good out there, for lack of a better word. So I'm just curious as to, do we have to, through our CMAS, always purchase through Garland
materials? Through CMAS, we can purchase any number of different materials we choose. And we've been choosing this one because we believe it to be the best product for our application. The price didn't change, they just made an addition.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I just am curious that to know if there's any other product within that we would be willing to think about, because, you know, there's a lot of money going into the material piece. So I know that the trustees were sent a letter from somebody who had concern in that prior. So it raises a flag for me. So thank you. I guess it moves to my 8.3.9 now.
Yeah, yours is next.
So along with this Garland roofing, now we have this contract where we've asked for the same materials, which will come through the CMAS process. And I see that we have the fiscal impact for $673,000, which I did my spreadsheet, and the subtotals do add up to that, but are we not doing the complete CMAS total, because that's a whole different price of almost $100,000 more? And if so, I do believe, when I'm just trying to think about the budget and where we're putting the correct numbers, we did the full price when we did the revision of these last two pieces where that is. So I have no problem approving it. This is the what you'd like to see. I prefer, I mean, personally, if I were shopping, that would not be, those sort of flags make me personally crazy. But I think you might want to say, bring our, ask us for a fiscal impact that reflects the bottom line of all of them, which was $776,936.74.
So I'm looking at the tower show right now. This captures this dollar here.
So here.
So they can just compare columns.
May I?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Is it accurate to say that the cover sheet doesn't show us the total, and ideally it would?
Yes.
Yeah.
And if we were doing it differently, that we were looking subtotals before shipping and knowing we were going to add percentage, but I just want to... consistent piece,
yeah.
Personally.
Right. So consistency is what you're asking.
Yeah.
The cover sheet to have the total of those four pages.
Why is that? That looks like a mistake.
What did we do before except? I missed my 10 key.
I have to cross-foot now.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dan.
Okay, so let's go through and see which one we've got for the time. So let's do it.
Maybe we should pull this one and come back to it.
Yeah.
Are you turning up the
key? Okay. Yeah. Patty, are you requesting this be pulled?
Yeah, if it makes it easier for them. Why don't we just put it to the end of the meeting, do the math, and then you can bring the number forward and we'll vote.
So,
8.3.9 will be pulled.
None there? Okay. But now we have 8.3.10. Go ahead, Jeremy.
$60,000 for an inspection? Question mark?
Question mark.
Okay.
8.3.10.
$60,000 for an inspection.
This is all special inspection, so this would be.
It better be gold plated.
It's very special. This is done on a time and materials basis, so this is actually an estimate. So they test the rebar, depends on how many shipments of rebar there are, they do copy this design, they do welding inspection, and it's all billed by the hour. So this is a guesstimate of what they think it might cost, usually on the high end.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
8.3.13.
Mm-hmm.
12.
Oh, that was also another inspection.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
But for pennies on the dollar. So we'll let that one go. 8.3.13. Minor repairs of the gymnasium. This is Natural Bridges. And parking lot at Natural Bridges Elementary School. There are two parking lots.
The front parking lot, the
one
in front of the building?
The one that's cracked and broken.
The one that's all broken up. It also includes the new water back check valves.
All right, and the other parking lot, looking at it this way to the left, that's okay.
That's okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so are there other questions, comments? Okay, do we have a motion to move minus item 8.3.9?
Yes.
Thank you.
Second. And the second, I'm sorry,
was
Cindy.
Cindy.
Thank you very much.
Okay, it's roll call. Sorry. Comments from the public.
Aye.
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 Thank you.
Now we're moving on to the expulsions. We have expulsion 12, 17, 18.
I move that we approve the expulsion of student 12, 17, 18. Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm.
It's been so long since I've done it.
Mm-hmm.
Second that motion.
Okay.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Abstain?
Aye.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
So we have 6-1, is that
6-1.
Right?
6-1.
Thank you.
And expulsion 13, 17, 18.
I move that we approve the expulsion of student 13, 17, 18.
I'll second.
Okay. And the second one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Abstentions?
No.
One no.
And now report of actions taken in closed session.
The trustees heard information for expulsions 12, 17, 18, and 13, 17, 18 for a vote in open session. The trustees took action on certificate, classified management leaves, retirements, and resignations and appointments. There was no information for employee discipline dismissal to these complaints. The board provided direction to Ms. Parks regarding negotiation with SCCCE for 2017-18. The board The board rejected information on a final special education settlement. The board received information on a final special education settlement. The board rejected a liability claim. The board provided direction to Superintendent Monroe regarding work agreement for assistant superintendents.
Yes.
We didn't discuss it.
So 2.6, you guys didn't actually discuss
it. I'm sorry, we missed it.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Okay, so we'll just change the report to reflect that that item was not.
You know, we'll bring it next week.
Okay.
So the liability claim was not discussed.
No.
Sorry.
No problem. This item will return next week.
Thank you, Dee Dee.
And which of us know this? This is the question.
Okay, we have a staff report now on the Harper High School exploration of the International Baccalaureate program.
Yes, tonight we have Principal Trace Brunieri, who will be facilitating the International Baccalaureate program and providing us some updates and next steps.
Thank you. I'm Tracy Ranieri, the principal of Harbor High School, and I have with me Matt Otterman, who is a social studies teacher at Harbor High, and Amanda Riley, counselor, and they'll be presenting some of the slides tonight. I just wanted to do a quick introduction of them and how we got started on this process. We have several teachers at Harbor High who came from Scotts Valley High School or went to another school as students. As IB students were taught at another IB high school, and they began talking to each other about the difference between AP and IB and had conversations with each other about their interests, and then they brought that to me. So that's how we started this exploration of IB.
So I'm Mr. Otterman. I'm Matt Otterman. I teach social studies, and I taught at Scotts Valley High School. I had the honor of teaching Nancy's daughter there, and it was my second and third year teaching, and it really influenced the way that I teach. I taught AP as well, and so probably the easiest baseline way of thinking about IB is, as an alternative to AP. Why would we do this? Why would Harbor, why am I excited? Why would I recommend this? Why do I think this would be something that would be good for us to do at Harbor? It is similar, it is a higher level program of education like AP, except that AP is an American, it's a national program. IB is international. It's a program that is all around the world. And IB students have a tangible product that they can walk away with. It's the IB diploma. And it has a very different focus than AP does, which tends to be very, very narrow in content. Each individual discipline tends to be very separate from each other. IB, much more, if you look at this kind of this graphic, without even necessarily reading everything, there's a holistic approach to the IB program, which all of those departments communicate with each other and are working towards a common goal. Along with that, it goes hand in hand with Common Core. So I was just here 2 weeks ago doing the Common Core training for social studies, and we were talking about the different strategies, what we're doing, you know, basically narrow the content down. We're working on skills, we're working on literacy skills, reading, writing, communication, and one of our teachers raised her hand and said, what if you teach AP? And they kind of went, yeah, AP, that's a whole different animal. But the beauty of IB is they don't, not only do they not conflict, but they are working towards the same goals, which is building skills. They're transferable skills. And they work really, really well for preparing for college. I've taught AP before, and I kind of throw up a Venn diagram. Okay, number one, I want you to pass the AP test. Number two, I want you to be prepared for college. There's some crossover, but they don't those two things don't necessarily, they're not one and the same. Whereas I strongly feel that the IB program really is one and the same. Students that graduate with an IB diploma are excellently prepared for college. And along with that, we've looked at a couple of different schools, including Sequoia High School, and they occupy a very similar place within their district that Harbor High School does. Also, Del Mar High School over the hill in Campbell Union High School District. Both schools have a very similar demographic to Harbor High School. And Sequoia has had the program for over 20 years, and when they took it on, they were facing declining enrollment, and now they are turning away students from within the district and from outside the district. And Del Mar, already after taking on the IB program 3 years ago, is starting to see similar things. So another thing that's cool about it is since it is an international program, in fact, one of our teachers who has taught IB before taught IB at a school in Thailand. It's a draw from around the world. Students that are in an IB program in another country can come to another IB school and not only get, you know, an international cultural experience, but continue with the same focus in education that they've been working in. It started in 1968, actually through four children of U.S. military that were moving around the world to get a comprehensive education, and has a very high pass rate, 78%. So you can see the United States, there are over 500 IB schools in the United States, and there are IB schools in just about everywhere in the world. I like this. Again, it's the IB learner profile. It's a very well-rounded, holistic approach to when a student graduates, when they are a graduating senior or heading off to most likely college. This is what they look like, and it really it really coincides with a lot of the work that we've been doing independently. We're in a WASC year, and so we've been trying to think about all these things. What are our SLOs, formerly the ESLers? What does a student look like? What are our lofty goals for when a student walks out of here? What can they do? What are they capable of doing? What are their habits of mind? And, you know, we came up with a lot of these things, you know, applying prior knowledge, evaluating multiple perspectives, sources of information, set goals, plan, anticipate, respect for self and others. And, you know, this is all stuff that we, through a long process as a school of individual teachers and staff, came up with all this stuff. And it's funny, you look at this and it really just, yeah, that's kind of it, mm-hmm. right there. It really, really works well. So it's not like trying to force a round peg through a square hole. It's very much what we're striving towards. And especially as we're in a WASP, heading into WASP, this could potentially be a great, not burden while we're busy with WASP, but something that is very much part of what it is that we're trying to do, trying to build as a school. So.
So there's two different options that you can choose as a student. You can, like AP courses, take one IB course in one subject, you know, here and there, or you can take the full program. So if you take one or more classes in IB, you can get an IB certificate. And the IB curriculum really starts in the 11th and 12th grade. So the 9th and 10th grade year prepare you for those IB courses in 11th and 12th grade. You can take one here or there. This would work really well for our AVID students because currently, if you're an AVID student, you are required to take an AP class during one of your years in AVID. So we would just substitute IB. Or students could take a course from each of the subject areas and fulfill two other requirements to get their IB diploma. The part that Matt was talking about, being well-rounded, is a huge part of IB and getting the diploma, because there's a course called the Theory of Knowledge that students take, and it's all about kind of meta, you know, thinking about how you learn. And there's a community service aspect to this as well. Students need to be involved in athletics, they need to be involved in the arts, and they need to do some kind of service to the community in order to get the IB diploma. And these are the six different subject areas, the ones you would expect. And the Theory of Knowledge class, Matt's going to take over.
So this is a class that is all diploma students. If they're going for the full IB diploma, this is a Theory of Knowledge, or TOK. This is a class that I would love to teach. It's a non-disciplinary class. It can be taught by a social studies teacher, or an English teacher, or a science teacher. And essentially what it is, again, in this program that is a connection between all these different disciplines, makes students ask the question, how do we know? How do we know what we know? What serves as evidence for A? What does it look like when we apply X theory to the world? It's kind of a rabbit hole of a class, but again, in this program that is internationally focused, it kind of makes students step outside of themselves and question their own assumptions, question the things that they think they know, and what they think they know, which may be based on their culture and how perhaps in a different culture there are different sets of knowledge, different understandings, and really kind of deconstruct things and then build them back up again in a way that helps them understand different types of knowledge and different types of understanding things. And it's very much inquiry-based. It's very much based on questions. It starts with questions. And at Del Mar, which is also an AVID school like Harbor is, AVID is linked with TOK. So all AVID students are automatically in TOK. They're not necessarily all full diploma students, but they're all in the theory of knowledge. All diploma students do what is called an extended essay. This is a part of earning their diploma. This is a student-driven, independent research project. And depending on what their particular interest is, if they gravitate towards the social studies, then they can do their extended essay in social studies. If they gravitate towards English, they can do it there. They come up with a question, and it begins with a question. And they seek guidance from a mentor. So, you know, me being a social studies teacher, even if it's not a student of mine, somebody might seek me out and say, "Would you be my mentor for this project?" It's a project that the student himself or herself does, but gets the guidance from a mentor, and they seek to answer that question that they're posing for themselves. And the mentor just kind of helps, you know, narrow that focus of the question and help them as they seek to answer it. So when I was at Scotts Valley, I had the opportunity to help two different students with their extended essay. Neither of them were students that I had in a class, but both of them were really interesting to help them, to guide them on this. Again, mostly the work is done by the student. I mean, all the work is done by the student. The other thing that's really cool is what the IB program calls CATS. This is a part, again, of the full diploma program. Creativity, action, and service. And the way that I view this is sort of, again, as an alternative to AP. Oftentimes we have an image in our head of like the ultra achiever AP student that would rather not take PE because you can't get a grade bump for it. Or just wants to, you know, memorize what you need to do to get a 5 on the AP test. This is kind of the way I interpret this. Is CAS is saying, no, in order to be a well-rounded student, there needs to be an emphasis on creativity, an emphasis on action, including a healthy lifestyle, and an emphasis on service. So that's all a part of it. You don't just study for the test in order to succeed. The diploma program requires them to be and encourages them and helps them see the benefit in being well-rounded, which not only helps them but helps the greater school community and everyone around them.
So I haven't worked at an IB school, but I went to Sequoia, I sat in Del Mar, and so I've been learning a lot about the program. I think it's a great fit for our school. Colleges recognize it really similarly to AP program. So UCs, CSUs, Cabrillo all take IB exam credit, and it varies from school to school how much credit they'll accept, what categories they'll give it credit for, if they give credit to higher level classes or standard level, but they do all give credit. And the most a UC will give is actually 30 quarter units, which can put a student at almost sophomore standing, which is really a pretty impressive way to start out college.
So in the board page cover sheet that I provided, it outlines some of the timeline or how quickly we could become an IB school if we wanted to, but it's a process that IB organization regulates and monitors along the way. 2 years is the fastest that a school could implement an IB program, and this is just the slide from the IB website that shows you how you do that. And I spoke with a representative in Maryland last week just to clarify some of those timeline issues. But we could be authorized in August of 2020, so the seniors graduating in June of 2021 would not be eligible for an IB diploma, but they could get an IB certificate for courses, and then the following school year students would be able to get a diploma. And the last slide. You know, based on how accessible the person in Maryland was, the representative who I spoke with, and the information from the website and the teachers that we talked to from Del Mar and Sequoia, it's really nice the way the IB organization supports teachers with training, making sure that the schools have all the things they need in order to implement the program. You can't, they're very strict. So you can't say, well, you know what, we're going to call this a pre-IB class. We're going to kind of just tip our toe in the water and see how this goes. You're either IB or you're not, and they tell you whether you can be or not. So you're all in or you're not in at all. So that's why they have this two-year process where you're making sure your teachers are trained, you've got your funding in place, so that you can start the program. I think that's our last slide. Yes, so are there any questions for any of us? Also, Terry Verasco stepped in, another counselor from Parker High School.
It's very exciting. I'm sure there are questions. I'll start with
Jeremy's
first. Okay.
So, Matt, I know you as an absolutely outstanding educator, and, you know, but you also know that Scotts Valley, which has an IB program, has now a diminished IB program. It's not what it once was. And so I'm wondering what makes you think that Harbor's program, which would be competing with Scotts Valley's program to attract students, is the only one in the area, would one, attract those students, and two, be successful beyond maybe offering one or two IB classes?
To be honest, I don't really know what's happening at Scotts Valley in the last couple of years since I've been there. So my experience with Scotts Valley and with IB is having taught there years ago. But the approach to IB has stuck with me, and it's affected the way that I teach. You know, I haven't worked in an IB school since then, so it affects the way that I teach social studies. The language that I use, the approach that I use to building skills. Scotts Valley is a very different school than Harvard is. And that's why we haven't really, we haven't, in this process, haven't explored Scotts Valley. We haven't even visited Scotts Valley. The schools that we have talked to are...
Will reflect the demographics.
Correct, yeah. You know, we're the newcomer school within the district. We have a lot of students that speak English as a second language. Scotts Valley didn't have an AVID program. We have a strong, thriving AVID program. So that's why we chose to focus on Sequoia, because they have an almost identical demographic to Harbor, and then also Del Mar. And Del Mar just went full IB 3 years ago. And so, you know, Sequoia, we went there to see, you know, what does this look like when fully implemented and people know about it and all the teachers are trained, and we talked with teachers and students and administration. And at Del Mar, we talked with them mostly, you know, how did you do this? Why did you do it? What are you noticing? So I don't know if Scotts Valley works as the best model for us. Except that it's close to us, that it's nearby. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Thank you.
Deb, you'll be next, Sheila.
My question was regarding the 2021 grads. So if they're applying to AP that year, but we're phasing it out, and they get the IB class instead, so that certificate would maybe supplement, because if they're counting on those grade bumps now, how is that going to affect them? Because that is really why they take the classes, right? So if they're counting on that, and that's their last year, and they're maybe going to take a couple,
They would take the, correct me if I'm wrong, they would take the, whatever AP classes they have would be on their transcript, and they would have the grade bumps for that, and then any IB courses they took in their senior year would act just the same as an AP class, and they'd get grade bumps.
Year, so.
And colleges would just look at all that together.
Colleges would recognize the students and what Harbor has to offer, so they would know that our school
has transferred to IB, and that is what we offer, and that's why they're making up taking all those APs.
I have another question
about Morris. Sheila has a question too.
Okay, there's one thing I kind of want to get straight before I ask a question that might not be a good question. When you say full IB, does that mean all the students at Harbor are going to be in all IB classes? All the students at Harbor are going to be in some IB classes? Or it just means you have IB?
So a full IB student is really a diploma student, a student who's taking the each of the six subject area courses and exams to get a diploma. That's full IB. The school is full IB, meaning you are an IB school. So I think we're using the words interchangeably.
That does not mean that everyone in the school is going to be IB.
Correct.
Okay. Now I have other questions, but so does Deb. So
and,
Deb, you want to go
Molly.
Back?
Molly has a...
I can ask this later, just real quick. If you're not in the IB track, getting that IB diploma, do colleges recognize the classes that you're taking,
that
even if you're
question.
Not in that college? Okay, thank you.
Was that a yes?
That is a yes.
Okay.
Can I talk about that too? That full... Watch my language. That the diploma program, if a student opts for the IB diploma, they are making a very big commitment.
In their junior and senior year.
Correct. Yeah, it happens in their junior and senior career years, and they're taking IB classes in all six categories. They are taking theory of knowledge. They're doing the extended essay. They're doing the tests and passing them. It's no small thing. It's not something that we would assume everyone or even a large number of students would do. However, we would hope that a lot of students at Harvard would take at least one IB class. When we visited Sequoia, I was in a junior level in 11th grade History of the Americas, which is their IB class, and the teacher there said that about half of those students were avid students that were in that class. The other question that nobody necessarily asked, but maybe you're kind of leading to, is how does it affect the rest of the school? And the quick and easy answer is it doesn't necessarily have to, kind of like AP classes, you have them at a school, but it doesn't necessarily affect the non-AP classes. Mm-hmm. However, since IB, the IB program, all six subject areas are coordinating and working towards common goals, I don't even know if I would be teaching an IB class, but it would affect the way that I teach my non-IB classes. And again, since it's so it fits so perfectly with Common Core, it kind of streamlines what it is that you as a school are trying to do. I teach freshmen, so if I know, there is no IB freshman class, but if I know that, some of the students that I have in my class, some of them are going to be graduating in 4 years as IB diploma students, some of them not, I'm going to be structuring that class that can best prepare those students for success in their 4 years here, along with everyone else.
Patty? And then Deb.
You tell me that you visited Sequoia High School. Is that San Mateo County?
San Mateo.
And is that up near 280 or down near 101?
Near 101.
It's down near 101. Okay, thank you, Frank. That helps me sort of it. Can you tell me the size of the school and how many students were there in River City?
There are 2,000. I would say a little over 2,000.
Okay, 2,300. So like 2.5 times the size of your school.
Right. It's a
and
large
how
school.
Many students graduate with the IB diploma from Sequoia High School in the last 2 years?
Between 65 and 70 was the number they said.
So two class size classes. And then I guess the last question is would you be able to, what would happen if you needed coursework where we couldn't fill a class? If it's, can a student who's not going for the certificate, such as an art class, because art at Harbor has changed now with the way things are, would they be able to be in the class and not be going for the certificate? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Dan?
I'm just wondering what, because I'm really bad about showing up to booster club meetings, what kind of communication around, because I have a feeling people are going to lose their mind, but some parents will, about this concept. So I'm just going to be curious what conversations you might get.
I've talked to the site council at two meetings, and I showed them a similar slideshow about IB. I've talked to the boosters about it, and I've talked about it at the principal's coffee, and people are really interested and excited to hear more about it.
And Sheila.
Okay, so I am the person that was going to ask the question that you partially answered, but I would like to ask a little more. Okay, I, coming from my other life, I have had experience with Scotts Valley's IB program, and what I'm going to say is not based on IB by itself, because you could say the same thing about AP. But I'm wondering what your thoughts have been about one of the things that happens to Scotts Valley is a real separation in terms of who's in, who's out, who's smart, who's not, who can do it, who can't. And from the point of view of having worked with a lot of disabled kids, it's also very high verbal oriented, and also with kids for English as a second language. I am a bit concerned about that and about the newcomers. And you said that the schools you went to had a similar population. I'm wondering if you can speak to that at all in terms of, you know.
Yeah, that's something that we really do not want to have happen. We do not want to have a school within a school. That's a priority for Harbor High. It always has been. That's why we look really closely at Del Mar and have been talking with the teachers at Del Mar, because they're also a strong avid school. And excuse me. And one of the ways that they tried to make sure that the students weren't split up is by making that senior avid class also the theory of knowledge class, so that every avid senior is in theory of knowledge. And so you're encouraging every avid student to take one or more IB courses, and you set up your avid students to get the IB diploma by making sure that they're in the theory of knowledge class. So it's not adding an additional class period.
Can I just get that straight with what you said about the IB people say you got to be in all the way or else.
Yeah.
So now you've got your senior, I was thinking that your senior theory class therefore was the ultimate IB thing.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, IB is going to let you give that class to everybody in the school, whether they're in IB or not?
Yes, because it's not that everyone in the school has to be in an IB course. It's that your school has to follow all of the authorization requirements in order to become a full IB school.
Okay, that's where I'm getting caught every time.
You know, we want to do an art IB class and a math IB class, but we don't want the four other subjects. They say, no, you have to, you're either in or you're out.
So your school has to make available
All
the pieces, but the kids don't necessarily have to take all the pieces. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you're working on the idea of how not to make it seem like there's the ones at the top and the ones at the bottom.
Yes, and that's what we've had to do with our AP courses as well. That's why we make sure that every avid student takes at least one AP course each of their years in high school.
Yeah.
And that has really helped to make our AP classes more heterogeneous.
Right. Well, and I want to say that I can really see where this would work better with Common Core,
mm-hmm.
and that the parents who are complaining about AP and memorization would be happier with it.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. I also hear a lot of concern about setting it up so that there's, you know, the kids that are going to succeed everywhere are going to succeed
mm-hmm.
at this too. So I'm happy to hear that you're thinking about that, and I'm looking forward to hearing more as you
mm-hmm.
go along.
Thanks. Jeremy.
Quick question about cost. There's a $100,000 a year coordinator,
mm-hmm.
and that's ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. And Cindy.
Thanks.
If I might, I don't really have a question, but just a brief testimonial. I really appreciate what you all have done in terms of exploring IB on paper and then going out and see the schools in action. And my own personal experience, I worked at two schools that had IB. One, I was a principal in the school that had IB for a good number of years. And another, I was in a principal that had a brand new IB program. And we were a school that had declining enrollment. We had a very strong AVID program. We had sort of a bad rep for reasons that weren't fair, but it happens. And the bringing in the IB program was really transformative to that campus, Fullerton High School in Southern California. We were about 1,200 students, and it had been about 1,600 students, and it was shrinking, sadly. And the IB program invigorated the curriculum and instruction throughout the campus, whether the teachers were teaching an IB course or not. I saw the instruction just blossom, and I saw the kids who took the theory of knowledge class. I bet to the student, if you were to survey them, they would say that was the best class I ever had in high school, and that was the class that most prepared me for college. So I could go on and on, but I'm a big advocate of this program. I think it's a perfect fit for Harvard High School in terms of your WASP findings, in terms of your values, in terms of wanting to create that global citizen, world-ready kids. I think it's a super fit and would be well worth the investment. And I honor the staff for bringing it to you. That's the best of all possible scenarios, that teachers who understand what this type of curriculum can bring for campus.
And I really appreciate
very much.
Yeah, I appreciate those comments, because what you just said is exactly what we've read and what we have heard from every person who's worked at an IB school.
Yeah, personal experience. And I talked to my son last night, who was at the high school where I was, IB student, and he said, oh, tell them, go for it. And theory of knowledge, get the best teacher on campus, they'll love it, they'll grow with the kids, and it'll be memorable for a lifetime.
Thank you.
Congrats.
Thank you.
For exploring it.
Okay, Jeremy?
Cindy triggered a question that I'd forgotten, which is staff. So how does the staff feel about it?
So Jenny Angelakis also came in as another staff member, and so I'll let one of them answer, maybe Jenny.
First of all, I apologize for being late. I have a six-year-old who got a bee sting that turned into a severe allergic reaction. I was at the urgent care. But I made it, and so I live very close, and somehow I made it, so I'm glad to be here as another staff member who's supporting. And I knew nothing about IB. I'm a CTE teacher at Harvard High School. I teach the graphic design, and I'm also teaching yearbook. And so, to me, I was very interested in hearing this whole new theory and finding out what it was about. And we first heard through Matt just giving us a general overview of the program, and then inviting any instructor who wanted to come to go on a school visit. So we got a good number of teachers visiting, and my partner in crime, Larkin Wilson, went and visited Sequoia, and we found out how IB relates to CTE in terms of art and the communications program. And I think that the staff has been very receptive. They, of course, have questions and wonder how it's going to affect their teaching and how it will happen, but they're open-minded and supportive overall, I believe, in looking into it further.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Forgive me. I know.
Just go ahead.
It's rhetorical.
Yeah.
I know we have a long schedule. You're going to come back to us in October, correct me if I'm wrong, to ask for our approval to make an application.
Yes.
I'm assuming that, yes, because we're just talking tonight, as civilized people do. It would really clarify things for me if there had been some sort of, speaking personally, not as a single board member, if there was some vote by the staff, and I'm thinking that some percentage of the staff says, yes, we want to do this, and I don't know what that percentage would be other than I think it would need to be perhaps more than a simple majority. Are you thinking along those lines?
Absolutely. I've been talking to our site union rep about what our process will be, and we're talking to folks about what should that threshold be for a vote, how will we vote, is it going to be a vote with names or anonymous? I feel like, Del Mar described the process that they went through, which was a very dramatic, very public, open process where they voted visibly at a staff meeting. And so we're trying to find out, well, what's the right fit? How do we make sure people feel like their voices are heard and that they know what they're getting into, and asking questions of each other as we go along? So, yes, we're absolutely not going to move forward until we know that people are on board. It's not my project. I'm not asking people to vote for something I want. I want, I'm working with the staff for what they're asking for.
Okay, Dee, you have a question?
Thinking of your next presentation in October or whenever it happens in the fall, and again, with Jeremy speaking as an individual board member, it might help me to understand how the fiscal impact plays out in terms of what you're going to need to do to adjust your budget at Harbor High. Where funds are going now that would be redirected to support the IB program, and how that's all going to play out in terms of making the bottom line meet. So that would be helpful to know.
I agree.
Okay, well, thank you, and we look forward to October or September.
All for coming tonight to share.
Happy summer.
Our next item is 8.5.1.2, staff report on the local control accountability plan.
Our next presentation, staff presentation, is a result of a year-long process of being inclusive, collaborative, and transparent around some key focus areas, which resulted in our LCAP presentation tonight. Tonight is two. We have our Director of Secondary Education, Julia Hodges, who will be presenting tonight, and along with our elementary partner, Mary Ann Robb. I think you know them well by now.
Yeah.
And that's the first part of it. And the second part is going to be the public hearing for comments.
I just want to acknowledge both Julia and Marianne for all the hours they put into this and the federal addendum that they found out about 2 weeks ago and have pulled together, and you're going to hear a little bit more about that as well. So I just want to commend them both for synthesizing all the work that's been done over the course of the year.
All right. Well, we have definitely spent a year's worth of, or you've crammed, I don't know how many years worth of learning into 1 year, but as you know, you're probably well more well-versed in the LCAP than I am, but this year I've been immersed in it pretty much from the beginning of the year. I don't know if you're aware of this, but our county office provides a great support service to school districts in the county on how to go through the LCAP process, and it's just been great for me to be a part of that group and to learn from Marianne James and others who are there. So our LCAP, or Local Control Accountability Plan, goes through a cycle every year. And this is somewhat what the cycle looks like. Right now, we're at a point where we've already reviewed our past LCAP, and we've made updates, and we're going to be asking for board approval. From there, we go to implementing new actions and continuing to refine and implement other actions that are being continued from previous LCAP plans. And then from there, we go to the needs assessment, and we look at our progress towards our goals. We collect our data. We look at our resources and our budgets and our staff, and we look at our student need. And this year, we've really focused on what are our student needs and how can we align our budget to meet those student needs. And really, our stakeholder engagement process is something that we're continuously trying to refine and improve. And this year we made some key changes in order to try to really get meaningful stakeholder engagement. One of the things that we did this year, we already reported on earlier, I think it was in April, where you heard about our MTSS retreat, where we invited teacher leaders, our RTI coordinators, our instructional coaches, administrators, counselors, all to a two-day-long meeting where we looked at student data, where our current student needs exist. We looked at what we're currently doing, all our many different initiatives, and then we also brainstormed not only just things that we thought were attainable, but we also brainstormed ideas that were kind of pie in the sky. If we could do anything, what would we do in order to change our student outcomes? Because when we looked at our data, we weren't necessarily proud or happy with some of the student outcomes that we were seeing. So we took all of that data, we took all of the different ideas that we had, all the different things we're currently doing, and we really outlined those tier one and tier two focuses and then aligned our LCAP to really support those focuses. So in regards to our stakeholder engagement process, we had that MTSS retreat, and we've been continuing that work with a small group of administrators throughout the year, and we're going to keep reporting back to the larger group. Then we also had our district advisory committee, which was comprised of union members, parents, and staff members. This group is something that we're continuing to talk about, and we have ideas for refining this group for next year. Another thing that Chris and Frank did is they went out and met with student focus groups. They went out to each secondary school, each middle school, each high school, and talked to kids about what they saw the needs were and what they saw was working at their school, and then also what they'd like to improve at their school. And their recommendations are in our LCAP. And it was really interesting to look through. I'm a data nerd. So I looked through all of their different comments, compared it to all the parent comments, because our superintendents also went out to our different parent groups and got their input onto what they saw the perceived needs of our students being, what things we're doing well, what do we need to improve in, and just really finding those common threads and trends throughout the different student groups, the parent groups. We did a parent and student survey and staff survey. So going through all that information, and really there are common themes and threads that showed up. And those are all in our LCAP. And let's see, I mentioned all the surveys. And also we're part of the Foster Ed Collaborative, which is a group that the COE facilitates. So we're making sure that we have access to the voice of our foster students. I don't know how familiar you are with the state priority areas, but every district's LCAP has to include all of these different state priority areas. Really, our six district goals, when you look at those, when you look at our four strategic focus areas, really they do address all of our state priority areas. And as you know, our LCAP is supposed to focus on three target groups of students. One of those groups is our foster youth, and we have 55 foster youth in our elementary and secondary school district, which makes up about 80.88% of our students. Also, English learners is another group that we are targeting in our LCAP, and we have 787 of those students, which is close to 12% of our student body. And then also low-income students are supposed to be supported and focused on in our LCAP. And that's our greatest percentage here in Santa Cruz City Schools out of these three groups, and that's about 37% of our student body. So really, when you look through our LCAP, we're supposed to be increasing our services to these specific student groups so that we are decreasing our achievement gap, so that we're paying extra attention, and we're really monitoring these student groups to make sure that we're not letting them fall through the cracks, and that we are ensuring that we have the official language is the increased and improved services to our unduplicated pupil counts. So these are the LCFF supplemental funds that we are going to be receiving in elementary and secondary. And with those funds, we are going to be spending them on the following items for elementary. And remember, these items are all in alignment with our four strategic focus areas, which are literacy, academic literacy, mathematics, English learner progress, and school connectedness. And also, they're all in alignment with what parents, students, teachers, and administrators, all of their input. So these are the things. We've got RTI coordinators and learning assistants, instructional techs to support RTI programs. That's both in, this is focusing specifically in elementary, so those staff members really focus on walk to read and academic literacy in elementary school. We have a behaviorist, a full-time behaviorist in elementary to support the implementation of PBIS. And also we have counselors in elementary paid out of LCFF. And in the parentheses next to each item, you can see which groups mentioned this as a key thing that they were really interested in seeing us use our LCFF money for. In continuing elementary, we have instructional coaches. We have two instructional coaches at elementary. And we have school community coordinators that are going to be paid for with our LCFF supplemental, and social work counseling interns in our sites. Each get an allocation depending on their unduplicated student pupil numbers. They get an allocation on how they're going to specifically meet the needs of their low-income students, their English learners, and their foster children. And that is going to, that will be showing up in their school plans, which you guys will be receiving in the fall. So if you're ever interested in how each school is using those funds, you can see that there. All right, so moving on to secondary programs and services, we have our response intervention coordinators in secondary. And in high school, those are really focused on math. They're math experts and really focus on making sure we have solid tier one instruction and then helping refine our tier two interventions in math. We have reading intervention sections, which is more of a tier three reading intervention for students who are two or more grade levels below in reading. We have math intervention sections for students needing extra support in math, social workers, and counseling interns. We have some counseling coming out of our LCFF, and also high school homework clubs are being funded through our LCFF supplemental. In addition, we have middle school after-school program coordinators and staff being funded out of our LCFF. Measure O also funds this for us as well, and we have math tutors at the high school level. Some of our AVID program is funded through our LCFF supplemental, and then some of our newcomer programs and ELD support tutorials are coming out of this budget. Our school community coordinators at secondary are also a part of this budget, and then our NGSS science coach, TOSA, is also a part of our LCFF budget. Looks like Abby got in there twice. And newcomers, we mentioned school community coordinators and coach. Oh, this is an extra slide. So, some major revisions. Really, the main major revision to our LCAP is that we did focus on our four strategic focus areas. And so, as you go through the plan, you should be seeing expenditures related to academic literacy, mathematics, English learner progress, and school connectedness. Some of the highlights, I think there's a lot, it's hard to just say these are the highlights, but we are really trying to use what we've learned in our MTSS training to make sure that our money is going towards our students in most need and what our areas of most need are.
We are really trying to refine our interventions at both elementary and secondary so that we're meeting all of our students' needs. And if they're not getting met in that tier one, what are we doing extra to support them? And really, our interventions we're designing with our ELs in mind and also with our low-income students in mind so that those interventions are for those students, but all students have access to those interventions. And then, let's see, we are continuing to align our data collection and refine our data collection to make sure that we do have key data points on each of these items so that we know how effective they are. And we know it's important not only to measure our students' progress, but also the implementation of each and have we implemented each program or each position well. And then also we are refining our elementary instructional coaching model, which you heard about in April. We were taking those instructional coaches and that we had that were content specific, and we're really focusing on just good quality instructional practices, and we're tying those coaches to sites rather than trying to have them serve all elementary teachers. And then last, we're continuing to look at our newcomer programs and supports to our EL students and really trying to make sure that we have the right programs and right classes for those students. All right, in the LCAP federal addendum, this is new this year. I have been learning a lot about this in the last couple of weeks. It just came out in the end of May. We knew it was going to be coming out. They kept telling us all throughout the year there's this federal addendum that's going to be coming. It's going to be what replaces the plan for your Title I, Title II, Title III, and Title IV. So we're not doing the old LEA plan. This is going to be replacing that, so we're not going to do that anymore, and we haven't done that in a number of years. And it's new for everyone, so there's no examples out there. So our county office led both Mary Ann and myself through a training just a week ago to learn how to fill out this plan and make sure that we are putting everything in it that's supposed to be in it. And really, it's a companion piece to the LCAP. So when you look at the federal addendum, it shouldn't seem like anything new, and it might seem repetitive, but that's because when we submit the addendum, the people that read the addendum are not going to look at our LCAP. So the LCAP does have to be reflected in the addendum. So there are some things that are even just copy and pasted because it needs the same information in it. So as you're reading through that, it's just a tip. If you're like, I think I read this somewhere else, you have. It's in the LCAP. It's just it needs to align with it. And really something else that's key that I've learned as we're writing the federal addendum is that we don't just write what we're spending our titles on. We write what our whole plan is. Like, how are you supporting EL students? Needs to be in there in the federal addendum, not just like what Title I money are you using to support EL students. So if we're using our LCFF supplemental, if we're using base dollars, all that needs to be in the federal addendum. It's not just about your titles, although that's how we get our access to that money. So really, it does include the plan for how we're spending our Title I, Title II, Title III. In this coming year, we are going to hopefully see those Title IV dollars. And it also includes much more than that. And the addendum is scheduled for board approval on June 20th, along with the LCAP. And the addendum does not require a public hearing like the LCAP does. Anything about the addendum?
No, I'm happy to answer questions if there are.
Okay. Mary Ann's been super helpful in getting the addendum piece completed. And let's see. These are our next steps. We have the public hearing, which is tonight. The board adoption of the LCAP, which would be next Wednesday. Then once the board approves our LCAP, that goes to the county office. Then the county office approves our LCAP, and then we implement it for the 18-19 school year. And remember that cycle you saw at the beginning of this slideshow? Then we start that process over. All right, time for questions.
Yeah. Questions? Comments? Jeremy, go ahead.
So, in the spirit of IV, and theory of knowledge and epistemological questions, which happen to be my favorites. You say develop aligned data collection to better monitor impact of intervention programs. In other words, how do we know that we're being effective? Could you speak for 30 seconds about that? I know we have a long meeting.
I will speak to that in regards to secondary math, because
sure.
That's something I've been working with our math team on in secondary. You've heard Steve McDowell talk about, he's one of our RTI coordinators at SOCO.
I know him well.
Okay. You heard him talk about kind of the process for our Tier 2 math intervention. We have that now at Harbor High School, and we're this coming year and our current the year we just finished, now that we have math data, we're really able to better monitor student progress. Our math data actually was very, it mirrored what we saw in our preliminary CASP results. So the math data that we're getting is really good and is a great indicator of how students are doing based on that type of assessment. So what we are looking at is two things in regards to intervention. We're looking at, one, our Tier 1 and what are our priority standards in high school. And high school teachers just met today really looking at what are those priority standards and how do we need to shift our CPM curriculum to make sure we're meeting student needs. And then, two, we're looking at those specific intervention classes and what are we providing to those students in that intervention. And then how are we progress monitoring to make sure they're making gains? And then big question right now is, if they're not making gains, or what do we do then? What is our Tier 3 for math intervention if we need a Tier 3? So right now we don't have a great one.
Is it then correct to say that Steve's work, which I think is brilliant, at Soquel High, Harbor High is going to use that same data. So we'll at least have two of the three high schools on the same page in terms of using the same criteria.
Yes, so Harbor High already did implement what Steve did this year, and they're continuing to refine it. Yeah, so like where Soquel was 2 years ago, Harbor is this year. And so Harbor is going to continue that process next year.
And Santa Cruz High, well, that's different. We'll let it go.
Yeah, Santa Cruz has a different system.
Can I just add a couple things that our MTSS team met today? And we were talking about the new things we're implementing for 19 or 18-19. And part of our leadership retreat is going to be about establishing what's our baseline data and how are we going to track the new things that we're implementing in 18-19 to measure the impact. So that's one example, math, but we also are going to be implementing activities directors in our high schools to better connect particularly our targeted subgroup students to school. So how are we going to, what's our baseline data that we need to collect, and how will we know that this has had an impact by the end of the school year?
The one thing I would say, Chris, is I think that's commendable, but we've all seen that baseline data shift every 2 or 3 or 4 years, and right when we think, okay, we're beginning to see some patterns, we have different baseline data, either mandated by the state or whatever. And so that's the frustration. It's very hard for us to do these longitudinal studies that are so important. We've asked for them. It's nobody's fault. It's just part of the system. It's very frustrating.
Yeah.
And again, nothing on anybody in this room. It's just tough.
It is.
Something that I think you will expect to see or can expect to see is that we're going to be using our California dashboard data a lot, which includes CASP and attendance. And so I think that is something that will remain consistent moving forward.
Well, here's the good news, too, about the assessment. One, with the math assessment, you get to have the pre-assessment where kids are when they arrive in your classroom at the beginning of the year, mid-year, and at the end of the year. And that's good, meaningful data that's aligned with the state data CASP. So that's the good news around that.
Yeah, it's true. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Patty, you had a question?
Yeah, just final thought, you know, after we've been pouring through that math data this year, this one full year, our first year in many of our sites with math data, and it's very interesting. There's a lot of interesting directions to go with that. And so as we get more versed in how do we use that data, now we have a three times during the year checkpoint to make sure that kids are in fact meet state of those goals. And again, with the CAP, you know, it's here to stay for a while, as with the LPAP, and we've just been, you know, coming out of that major shift. Now the CAP's again as well. Hopefully we'll be here for a while. So.
Thank you. I'm looking here and I'm just wondering, what is our plan to work towards the desired supports that the community has brought forward? Because I think as a board member, a lot of times I'm contacted or some of the conversations are, the community understands that there is a need and they do understand that we need to reach to meet the needs of the students that are most vulnerable as listed. But they ask about it in an all-student plan, and the word local control is somewhat far-reaching for a parent who may be continually writing for more music classes and some different things. So one of the pieces I see under desired supports are summer enrichment programs, and we're not having summer school this year, and I just want to put that out there and ask, how do you focus and move towards that?
I think the thing that we also have to be is data-driven, and the results for our summer programs haven't yielded the impact that we want to see. So I think it's a combination of it's local control, but it's also us helping people understand that we want to invest our money where we're going to see the greatest impact on student achievement. And there are so many things we'd like to do. I mean, I think... Well, parents would love to have one-to-one counseling available on our campuses. There's a lot, you know, there's so many. We just can't do it all. So
I'm appreciative of that answer, and I'm also appreciative that we say we're data-driven. But if we're data-driven, we need to be data-driven across the board. And I have not seen improvement in some areas, especially for those most vulnerable. And I just really will continue to squeak about summer programs, because we're having students, especially language students, who are no longer in maybe an area where English is spoken, which is not at home. And if we want to make any gains, which have not been easy to attain, and that the data has not reflected, then I think that we just have to have some very honest conversations around it. It's okay, there's no right, there's no wrong. But I can't continue to sit here and see desired supports and then say, oh, we can't get there.
So I want to assure you that we're having those difficult conversations, and that was what those 2 days of MTSS work were. We were looking, we were taking a hard look at some hard data about where our kids are and where we want them to be, and it's not where we want them to be. And we made changes in our action steps this year based on that evidence that we needed to shift resources if we were going to, and change what we were doing if we wanted to see different outcomes. And we don't know that this iteration is going to get us there yet, but we're going to have to keep measuring and we're going to have to keep iterating until we get there.
And I very much appreciate that, and I think that it now will go to the board to start looking about our direction and our vision and being data-driven to see if we're able to meet our vision or have to refine it so that we may approach it differently to meet the actual need that we state we're going to meet. Okay. It's the frustration that parents come to me with. You know, the conversations around it. And if there were easy answers, we would be there. So I appreciate that, and I'm just going to try.
Okay, Sheila.
If I may add one thing too, I think we've taken a very serious hard look at, you know, our core instructional program too, and you know, and I wish we could offer a full gamut of summer and after school programs. And it's also very important that children are connected during the 6 hours that they're in the regular, you know, what we call our tier one program and the tier two. So that I really want to commend our district to really take an honest look at what is happening in those 6 hours between 8 and 2 or 9:30, 8:30, and 2:30, whenever our children are at school. So hopefully we can do it back and take a look at what they are. Like I said, we're trying to, just today we had a teacher at middle school. He's going to be teaching a middle school math intervention for 1 week summer camp at Heritage Junior Garden. So he just finished a training that's going to be rolling. That's going to start next week. June 25th, so we'll do that one-week intensive summer math camp, which I'm very excited about. It really is, and he was really excited about it as well. So, thank you.
Okay, Sheila, go ahead.
Okay, I actually wanted to make a comment, but I now I've got a little additional comment with what Patty said, which is that sometimes the things that we look for data improvement, and sometimes the things that make that improvement are far off of where we think, you know, so that, like, being able to do cursive writing turns out has something to do with how one learns language. So we, you know, the world dumped it very quickly, and now we kind of need it back. So I think that, you know, some of what I felt like you were saying, Patty, has to do with, is there something about summer school that we should be thinking about that maybe isn't answered by whether they go up from second to third grade in their reading ability, but rather what else it gives them. I just wanted to say that given that we are having constant changes of how we measure things and where our baseline is, and given that that makes it all very hard, I take a great comfort in what the two of you have done. I don't know how you don't run screaming down the street, but because it's so, you know, OCD intensive. But what I find is that when I have questions as I'm reading through this, and I think, but have they thought of this, or but have we done this, or but how do we measure this, or but is that, that you have asked those questions, and every time the next part of what I read is answering those questions, and it to me, it does give us then the broad picture of where we're going, growing, and where we're changing, and you know that the two of you are thinking about this, and that in the thinking, a plan has developed. A coherent, good plan has developed. So I just wanted to tell you I appreciate that, because given that we don't have stability in what the state asks of us, we have it here. So I want to thank you.
Cindy?
Same for me. Thank you for putting all this together. I had not an intensive amount of work, and one agency asked for things this way, another agency asked in that way, and we ask for things another way. It's a very intense maze and puzzle, so congratulations for putting together an immense amount of work. The one question I had regarding our goal three, that's to eliminate the achievement gap, and reflecting on what Patty said also, it's so pervasive and it's so tough, and like others have said, if there were a magic wand, we would have waived it by now. But my specific question is, regarding the site-targeted support allocation, is that like a small amount of money, or is that a significant amount of money that individual sites, if they wanted to do extended day, or they wanted to do some more extended year, or they wanted to do some bold, creative action that is not district-wide, are those funds sufficient for individual sites to make an impact?
It totally depends on the site, because our sites have such different and varied populations.
Right.
A school like Harvard is going to receive a lot more LCFF supplemental and Title I money, so they will have more money to work with to try something maybe innovative than a school like Santa Cruz High or Soda Hill or Westlake is far on the other side of the spectrum, where they receive actually very little because they have very few students that are in those categories.
And there's,
they get proportional LCFF
sure,
money,
yeah,
but
right.
not the Title I money.
We have a formula for allocating to each of the sites. It includes a per ADA
right.
allocation mm-hmm. that's smaller. So SoCal and Santa Cruz, for example, do have a per ADA allocation, but there's weight. It's all weighted based on the number of unduplicated pupils mm-hmm. at their school site, and their single plans reflect all the expenditures for using the supplemental dollars. So when you read their single plans, you're going to see their specific site plan and what they can do with and how they're using those resources.
But that would be one avenue and source of funds to, if a site thought, like Patty's thinking out loud with us, if the extended summer enrichment or ELs who are not making sufficient progress, push resources really directly to the students, in addition to all these wonderful interventions that are outlined at that one avenue.
Sure, sure.
The stuff works. They use an industry term.
Yes.
Try something new.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Try something new.
Mm-hmm. Something bold, creative. Go for it.
Hey.
Well, welcome to Greg and Dorothy. We got our
yeah.
Hello.
Flavor of the challenge. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It was a great.
Thank you.
Okay, I would open the public hearing, and this is an opportunity for the public to provide input on the LCAP. Anyone like to speak? Okay. Close the public hearing, and do we take a 5-minute break now, folks? We're going to probably go until 10 o'clock.
I'm okay.
I can go either way. I'm going to go.
She's leaving. Okay.
Sure.
I'm okay.
Okay, 5 minutes.
Okay.
Okay. Watch the time. So 5 minutes. And it is 8:30.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Oh, I just went, but I just prepared and figured I did everything. So
yeah.
I
no, I should have come out and told you we didn't do
that. I know.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like you were just the short of the dinner. Thank
you. I feel like
yeah, it'd be interesting. So, you know, so I'm just saying, I know those were three of the most impactful, best things. And it wasn't enough really for my and when she started to take it, the instructor who had never been I'm not sure you could do it. Like the kids are going to be there and you want to know what you want to do. But I just want to try it. So I'll type this and you will never be as challenged in your college. Sometimes what we're just catching, you know how that takes away.
option for it.
Yeah, but it's my fine.
Oh, okay. I was thinking of a headache. So I was actually going to suggest a piece of chocolate. But never mind. Just chocolate.
Do you have chocolate? Chocolate.
I just have that caffeine.
But do you have chocolate? I told you about chocolate.
No, here. Here's that big bag of chocolate.
I'm sorry.
I'll
take chocolate. Yeah. Chocolate. I'm like, oh, there's some chocolate in the bag.
I ran out of my assessment in my first Sunday to restock. You know, it says it's, I think that's why it says
that's why it says I'm going to shuffle. I'm going to shuffle past you. I haven't seen anyone around since 5 o'clock when everybody cleared out. Not one person.
So we have this and that part of the next one.
Okay, thank you so much.
You need water, Sheila? You got
one. I got water. Nancy brings us a lot. So, Dee Dee, I'm going to New York from the 22nd to the 28th.
Oh, I'm
at the firm meeting after that.
Yes.
Of course, I don't have my book with me, but I got my brain for whatever good that is.
Come back on
Thursday, 28th at night. So. Sure. Yeah. Me too. Should we head for that and we'll talk to each other as we get closer? Okay. Yeah.
It's just a one, right?
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember we pulled that.
Yeah.
Probably
so that. And then, yeah, last Saturday, maybe.
What?
So I'm letting you.
If I do, I can't remember what it is now.
Over.
You're over here.
So I have Dave's card tonight. So
I'm Libo, so I'm entering the opposite.
He has middle finger.
This?
If I don't have to go out to Socal, I like this all the same. But I don't know. I don't know if there is things to go to as well over there.
Well, we could meet downtown, which is more middle.
And I also have parking to turn that water.
Yeah, well, it depends on where. Like,
my daughter harassed me constantly about all the. Plastic.
We're downtown. It's good. You know what? It might not be very crowded downtown on the 4th because they're big on the team. We don't have a break.
How are you feeling, Dee Dee? Yeah. It was a bad one, huh?
I had bronchitis.
Oh, my goodness.
That'll knock you out a little bit there, yeah.
It's not the worst
class. Oh, yeah.
So you finished work.
And then I got
that
always happens.
You know, that's, yeah.
Always.
But count me in every vacation. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And your body knows.
Yeah, I know. It's like,
I'm nervous about that because I'm going to New York. And like, and everything started to hurt. I'm thinking, oh, God, don't get sick. I'm at the end.
And at the end, we push so hard.
Yeah.
You know, you don't even stop to think how you're feeling.
Exactly.
You just push, push, push.
Yeah. I can't think of any place. But there seems like there's plenty of places. We have some time to think. I think the buttery might be crowded that day. Because I did think of that. Oh, probably not. We can do later that.
I can't even get to the meeting. That's what I mean.
Now by working the engine, right?
Okay. We'll say tentatively
what? 2:00? Huh? 2:00 on the 4th? Yeah. And then we can check in.
Call the meeting to order again, and we're going to move an item up, the staff report on the bond budget update. 8.5.2.2 is going to be the next item.
Deb, she's on her game tonight.
She had caffeine, I'm sure.
Okay, all right, so we have two measures, 208 million, 208 million, 208 million. That's just the bond funds, exclusive of any other funds that come to bear. So far you've spent $4 million and change, and there's $203 million left. So you're about 2% through your program at this point in time. Well, these expenditures are through April. So I'll explain what the, I'm not going to go through each of the slides, but I'll just share with you how to read the slides. Okay. The resources are the funds available to the site, including bond and state funds. The first slide is just so you can see where we're at with the bond funds, but the following slides include everything as a resource. The allocation is basically a budget that's been developed with the architects and the bond committee team and so forth in terms of what prioritization there has been. Expenditure to date, that's a cash expenditure to date. It's not all of the purchase orders and all of the other expenses. It's just what money has actually flowed out of the accounts. Projected fiscal year 18-19, that's what we expect to spend next year. What we do is we have a way to predict that, and it's only a prediction because, you know, things wax and wane, and these are our best guesses. Percent complete, that's the amount that you spent divided by your resource. Multi-project overhead, we set aside 5% at each of the sites for non-project specific things like surveys, planning, other items that, CEQA for example, other items that you can't aim at a particular project. Okay. Utility infrastructure, currently we're calling that the outside of the buildings, utilities, things like drainage, water, sewage, etc. So that's how you read the chart. Okay. And you've had this before you, and so any questions?
Hey, Jeremy.
I have two, but I'll go to the easy one first, and that is on natural bridges. The current resource is $5,421,000, but allocated so far is $100,000, approximately more than that. So what happens if I'm reading that correctly, where does that extra $100,000 come from?
Good question. So the way that these allocations, let me go to that slide.
I got it.
Oh, it's right there. Okay. So the way these allocations work is the architects provide an allocation to us, you know, we report it. And so the way I would look at that is they're going to have to be reallocated. These are not projects that are necessarily initiated, so it's not like the horse race has started and the committee fees. It just means that we're going to have to figure out a way to get that $100,000 out of it.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, what you're implying is that each site has to stay within its budget.
Yes.
Thank you. That's it. Then second question, if I may,
yes,
is the hard one. Coming back to Harbor High, if you could call that one up. I know that we're going to talk two things
going back and forth.
Sorry. Oh, you're doing on them. Sorry. That must be frustrating.
Okay. All right. So I know that we've talked a great deal about the pool and that the pool will be more than we thought it would be for reasons that we can't control, but we haven't really allocated that to it yet, as far as I know, as a board. So I'm wondering how that money, that amount got there. Or am I mistaken? Did I miss something?
Hey, Mark, I'm asking Trevor to set up, too, because I want you to just get an update quickly about the recent conversation at the Harvard Committee.
You are correct, Jeremy. We haven't brought that to you yet because we do not have the official numbers. That number was generated from the architect after conversations with the contractor and his subcontractors on expectations. So when he updated that for Mark, he was making an assumption that he would be bringing something to you, but we don't have DSA approval, so we don't have any bids yet. So that number is sort of a placeholder on an expectation that hopefully in the first board meeting or shortly thereafter, the next year, we'll be bringing that conversation.
So not on the 20th of this month?
No.
And then by then we'll know what the real number for the track and field improvements will be too, because one of the things we've talked about is what if that comes in at 15 and this really is at 8.5, then you're at 23.5 out of 29. There's not a lot of money for other things, so it's going to be makes it a tough decision.
Exactly. So the good news with the field project is we have a pretty good handle on that right now, but again, by the beginning of the year we will be so close to finished, we'll have a very, very close final number on that.
Do you have a guesstimate? It'll be more than 9,665.
Barely, if at all.
Oh, really?
I think we're going to be right where our projected costs are.
Wow.
Keep your fingers crossed. And I may have spoken too soon, and jinxed it.
You're talking to the girl with the Garland roofing problem.
We're out of the ground for the most part, and so that's where the big surprises come. So now it's mostly all surface work. We still have some work to do along the gorge, but and we did have a meeting last week with the site and their bond site committee, talked about these numbers and talked about priorities and stuff, and we're going to be meeting back with them again in October again once we've got some hard numbers on the floor.
Okay.
But these numbers are starting to get relatively close to kind of rule of thumb budgeting.
Okay, go ahead, Patty.
So, Jeremy, I think it would serve to. The way we look at these numbers is you use them to prioritize your projects, figure out when you should do them, and whether you should initiate them or not, okay, in terms of design and so forth. So, this number right here would include contingencies, soft costs, and whatever known costs that we already have. So hopefully it comes within these numbers at this point. And every budget I guess, as Trevor said, we'll be back when the project is complete, because the budget will be adjusted to be back.
Well said.
But we have been watching carefully. We have the plans.
Yeah.
Right, okay. And so the keys are things like the TBDs and the things that aren't on here yet.
Right.
What the way I would look at it is a $22 million versus $29 million. So when you want to put things into the classroom, you should look at what that remainder is and carefully look at what Mod Phase 1 and Mod Phase 3 will be. But I'm not an expert on Harvard. But that's how we look at budgeting overall.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, it's Hotel High. Remind me, what is the interim housing cost of $3 million placeholder for? We're not bringing portables. Is this because the office is moving? Are we charging the site for the office? I'm sorry. I know we've talked this to Deb, and Deb's going to be right if I ask another question. But
we are bringing some portables on, but we're not bringing the full 21 portables on. We're bringing on eight. 3 million is a placeholder. Our latest number is 2/3 of that.
Okay.
Thank you. And Deb?
I didn't have a question. I just have a comment. So
go ahead.
I appreciate this format very much. Mm-hmm. Thank you. It was very easy to do, and I appreciate it.
And with that, I'll say now I have my baseline data number, because you've given us, you've said this is from April or from November to April, so I know that's what's been spent. I can wrap my head around where you've reconciled, so thank you very much for this. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, then we will go back to item 8.5.2.1, the roofing contract.
Sorry,
8.5. Yeah,
I added it as a number.
Oh, this is a different one.
No, sorry.
Roofing and solar. Internet is back.
That
these are
yeah.
Oh,
bam.
That's right.
Back.
All right. Net neutrality,
because I just saw that.
So this is for the this is the yeah. project that's bid for Santa Cruz High, the re-roofing mm-hmm. project. This is for the actual work itself. It was taken out of bid, multiple bidders. This is the low bid is Roofing and Solar Construction Inc. And Meyer Culture, you've been working on another site for us as well, same company. So this, our recommendations, we proceed with them as a low bid or do the installation. Earlier today, you were taking action on the materials. This is the actual installation of those materials by the person who bid this job to do that actual work. It's a removal and replacement of approximately 15,000 square feet of roofing associated with homes.
Do we have questions, comments? Patty?
I just want to be clear. This company is the company that we had some nonsense before where the owner had contacted the board. Their license is less than 2 years was the piece. Nothing personal, but I'm not for this company. Just want you to know that.
Any other comments from the board? Comments from the public? This is an action item. Do we have a motion?
Can I get something clarified?
Sure.
I didn't. Is there something I'm supposed to know that was just talked about before I vote?
So From what I recall, Trevor, can you say anything?
Because I want to make sure I get the history right. Because from what I recall, Trevor, on another roofing project, there was a challenge by another roofing contractor of this contractor, from what I recall. And I don't recall the specific challenge of what the allegation was, Trevor, but can you, do you recall?
Yes, the original challenge was one issue, and then the follow-up correspondence, which was shared with globally, was an airing of accusations of improprietary behavior, misrepresentation of their licensing. So we just turned it all over to the attorney and said, tell us what to do. And they said, most of it's unfounded. Some of it has fact, like they didn't sign something they were supposed to sign that was irrelevant to the outcome of the bid, and so therefore was dismissible.
And we are using them again because?
They're an appropriately licensed contractor to do this type of work, and they are a low bid.
And we're not worried this is going to happen again?
The protest was deemed invalid.
So you figure they're not going to try again?
Well, I'm not sure the question is try what?
Yeah. Well, this time, Sheila, I guess that before you took action, from what I recall, before you took action on the other contract that was before you for the same company, the communication, which went straight to the board, was prior to you taking action.
Yes.
We've not seen the communication this time for this.
There has been no protesting of this particular at all.
Okay.
Did I hear you say you've worked with this company before in the district?
They have another contract with us that they have started. So far, they're performing well. I don't have any concerns as of yet. Obviously, we are watching because people raise concerns, and so that always makes you cautious that they check all the boxes as far as a legal issue goes. So all we can do right now is watch them and make sure they do what they're supposed to do and not pay them too fast.
Can I follow up and ask what project that is? I don't recall.
Harbor High.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, are we ready to make a motion?
I move approval.
Okay, second? Okay, Deb and Dee.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, one no and abstain.
Is there an abstain?
No, I think it's.
Is it, while Mark is still here, I have a suggestion. Is it okay for me to see this? If I should have asked this previously. This is these slides, this presentation you made or that we looked at is really clear and strong. Is it available for the public?
It's on our website.
It's on the website.
Yes, the board book is published always on our website.
And we're putting
under the bond section, Jeremy?
Yeah.
I think it's
great.
I will be posting it on the bond website now that it's
we've
gone through its process.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
That what Mr. Brito showed there was different than the PDF.
Not that I know.
Oh, so that is
what
we put in the board.
That's true.
Okay,
our next item is the bond budget update. The budget overview. Sorry.
Okay. So we provide you with several sets of information. And we provide you with a SACS report. We provide you with a set of slides. We provide you with a budget book. We provide you with an executive summary this year, too. So lots of information. Happy to answer any questions you might have. Just to share with you a couple items before I walk you through some of the slides that highlight some of the changes between our workshop and now. As recent as noon today, we were looking at the latest information from the state regarding changes to the funding at the state level. We've seen another change from the conference committee that's going to be acted upon. Included in the workshop, we had an estimated $344 for ADA in one-time money we were to receive. That has been adjusted down to $168 per ADA, so a decrease of about $1.1 million in one-time funding for 18-19. However, on a positive note, and in our executive summary, we speculated on what everyone's speculating on, which is how much this one-time money is going to become ongoing funding for the district and for all districts. So the other change, which is not in the slide set, but we will incorporate into information we share with you on an ongoing basis, is the increase in the COLA going from a 3% to a 3.7%. So it's a 0.7% increase in ongoing funding for the district, about $261,000 annually. That offsets the decrease of about $1.1 million in one-time money. So after 3 years or so, the loss of one-time money will be offset by increased ongoing funds. So that's a positive change for us. At the workshop, we share with you as well that the LCFF instrument, LCFF calculator that we use, had been corrupted for our district. That has subsequently been addressed, and subsequently we have incorporated into the slides you had this evening, the multi-year you had this evening that's in your budget proposal, is a modified LCFF revenue. It's positive for us. It amounts to about $1.1 million beginning in 1920, and an additional $800,000 or so in 2021. So a positive trend for us from an LCFF calculated perspective, and that's something we talked about at the meeting. Other adjustments we've made in the multi-year projections, and we've highlighted in the slide set we provided to you too, is our contribution. The contribution that we calculate is the last step in the process of developing the budget. After you go through revenues and expenditures, you look at your contribution. And the document you have in front of you tonight, the budget you have in front of you tonight, reflects an adjustment to special education costs for us. The county did not have someone assigned to their special ed reconciliation, their forecasting. We got the information from them on May 25th, which was after your workshop. And so we have about $750,000 in its additional expense for services, which we have integrated into your budget. The way that it's done is it's a reduction in your revenue. It's the revenue that was allocated out to the district. So it's an increase of about $750,000 in special education costs for a variety of services for young people. The other significant item which we've calculated here in your contribution is your contribution to routine restricted maintenance. And the routine restricted maintenance percentage for us, we talked about in the presentation, it's going to 3% in 18-19. And to walk a little bit down memory lane for you, routine restricted maintenance used to be that districts could do the total of 3%, and a half percent of that 3% could be dedicated towards deferred maintenance. And there used to be a state match for those dollars. There's no longer a match, but in anticipation of us receiving modernization funds, if you receive modernization funds, which we are applying for and expect to receive, we have to hit this 3% threshold. So how that's calculated is through your contribution. So we've modified the contribution for the district. That's a, you know, several hundreds of thousand dollars in that adjustment. So that's another item that's adjusted in your budget. Okay? Those are some of the significant items we've modified in the budget documents overall, and we captured that. So that's kind of the highlight. We put the same slide set we have for you in the workshop, and then we captured some of those adjustments between the workshop and the proposed budget. And that just verbally telling you what some of those bigger ticket items are related to. There's a net decrease in your reserve associated primarily with that contribution, and that percentage is going from 7% down to a 4% range. And with the latest changes, we were looking at an estimate today. We think that with the latest changes with the revenue, the loss of one-time money and the ongoing money, we think it's coming out about 3.8% in that third year. So we're still above the 3% threshold. We think we'll have a reserve of 3.8% inclusive of those modifications. Greg and I have been spending time looking at the special ed contributions, going through line item by line item. Again, just validating what those contribution numbers really look like, and if there's any changes, any further changes to that, we will incorporate that. But we're going through really as much as we can with a fine-tooth comb to make sure we're reflecting what those contribution numbers will be, primarily, again, for special education and for our routine restricted maintenance. So that's kind of a big picture change from your workshop to the documents you have in front of you tonight. We also took our first pass at kind of an executive summary for the public and try to capture and highlight some things from a big picture state budget perspective, how we're spending the funds in the district, what those percentages look like, and then optimistically hoping that we see this ongoing trend, and we've seen some of it already, of we're seeing some additional ongoing recurring dollars as opposed to one-time dollars. I hope that trend continues for us. And as it does, we'll weave those items into the budget. I shared with Greg and Suzanne today, I'd like to be able to modify the SACS pages that you officially act upon on the 20th, but I know it's a lot of work to make all those changes, inclusive of those most recent edits. If we can pull that off by tomorrow, Greg's over there, he's staring at me, but if we can pull it off by tomorrow, yes. I'd like to have it in there. I'd like our adopted budget to be reflective of the latest information we have, but it's tedious, time-consuming, but I'd like to do that. And absent that, what we'll do in your narrative that we bring to you next time is we'll have a narrative that speaks to it, and we will have a multi-year document that's an Excel document which we append to the SACS report that you officially act upon that's reflective of those items. If we can't go through all the motions of modifying all that in SACS, we will produce something in Excel which basically reflects those changes. So we can refer back to the adopted budget. We'd officially change it at the first interim, but we know going into the year, this is what our general fund budget is going to look like. Okay? So that's kind of a big picture recap for you, the slide set, and that's I've captured for you the big significant items that are the change between the workshop and tonight. Okay?
State reminds us regularly that our budget is a day at a time.
Living through it
all. Yeah, that's for sure.
Okay, Jeremy, you have a question?
Yeah, I mean, one of the assumptions that I'm seeing for 1920 and 2021 is a 6% increase in health and welfare benefits. And that's really huge. Because if it comes in as it did the next year at 2.4%, every percentage below 6%, the district gets a $210,000 ongoing.
True.
Because 21 million benefits, 1%, 210,000. So if it comes in again at 2.4%, we'll have an extra 700,000. And then that's ongoing.
True.
And then if it comes in again at 2.4% 2021, we'll have 1.4 million, and that's ongoing. And so when I'm not going to talk about negotiations specifically, but in a general sense, to me, that's always the huge unknown. And so where do you come up with the 6%? I know you know that's where I'm going. I mean,
I was just telling you, Jeremy, I've seen 18% increases in a year.
Yeah, but we haven't seen this since Obamacare.
Well, so prior to Obamacare, I'm going way back. Right. 18%. I would tell you, Jeremy, as we walk down the path to that number, we'll make adjustments to that. We'll be very upfront about it. I think that if you were to budget 2%, if it's an excess of that, then, you know.
Can I give a little history?
Sure.
3 years ago, we were budgeting 8.
Right.
So we've reduced it, and right. This is where the county office, who does our bigger oversight, this is where they're comfortable with us. We asked to be able to budget lower than 8. That's what they were originally asking us to do. So it was three or 4 years ago that we made that shift. We reduced it.
And Jeremy, two things. One is, just to recall, one of the things which we've modified in our multi-year related to property taxes,
which we've not budgeted up from 2 to 3.
That's right.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And that's another 200,000 a year for every percentage,
that's
more
right.
or less.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
I think that the benefits thing is, I mean, I wish it was easier, Jeremy.
I mean, if the county is comfortable with 6, it's better than 8. Mm-hmm.
But it's always going to be variable, and we obviously, we're all happy when we see it coming at 2.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, maybe there's an even greater conversation to be had, too, Jeremy, with the GAPA that we're in. And there's probably still some time to do that. I'm aware that there are varying rates for districts within the JPA, so we've had some conversations. I'd like to get some more in-depth appreciation of that, inclusive of utilization, and you know, what's their longer-term plans as well, too. So, but the medical thing is a big discussion. So.
Okay, she was next.
Me?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I already should know this, and my brain has just slowed down to near stop. I just wanted to back up to the special ed thing for a minute. And are we talking about a change that's due to what the county funds, to what the county gets, to what we are spending? What is making this large change?
The large change is the number of autism placements and severely handicapped student placements and non-public school placements that we're inheriting from our feeder districts. 8th to 9th grade students coming up. We also, this year, Chrysalis has gone K-8 up till this point, and they're opening the 9th grade Chrysalis classrooms. It is better for us to place our kids with an autism diagnosis in the Chrysalis program. It costs us less than putting them into the Bay School. Mm-hmm. But, and the other things that, and I talked about this in one of my superintendent's updates, we have a regional LCI that moved into our SELPA boundaries. And LCI, I forget what the acronym stands for,
but
it's a group home.
Right.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And that group home serves all severely autistic students who are all placed in non-public schools. And so part of that AB 602 revenue, before it's distributed to the districts, we have to pay for that first. Right. We have to pay for the kids in that program first. Then, and the whole SELPA shares that cost, even though that house is in our district boundaries. So the whole North County SELPA shares that burden. But between that, additional high needs placements of students increased our costs, or lowered our revenue from the AB 602, because we pay off the top for our regional programs first before we get our revenue.
So are you saying that we have gone up from where we used to be in terms of having such programs, they're either coming to us with the IEP that says they have to have these programs, or we are having more?
These were 8th graders transitioning to 9th grade.
But not the Chrysalis. No, are we?
The Chrysalis. No, the Chrysalis.
We couldn't have expected it, is I think what I'm trying to figure out. It has this all increased, and why is it all increasing in Santa Cruz?
It's increasing everywhere. I mean, all of every single one of. I could do a longer presentation on the.
Yes, but we'd be. Somebody would kill me. So short would be.
On the, I spent hours with the SELPA operations committee looking at all the districts and the impact on all the districts, because we changed the funding formula because of the number of placements we had. We felt we were disproportionately supplementing augmenting SELPA costs. So I'm trying to, how do I say this as briefly as I can? We're all seeing increases in costs. We're all seeing increases in high-needs student placements. We have both new students to our district and new students to our districts coming from our feeders, and new students who fall into the criteria of high needs, and new residential placements. So that's
new students coming from outside of Santa Cruz County.
Both.
At high school age.
Right, yes.
And because it's a high number, this is a high increase, right?
Well, you think about each of those kids maybe being $100,000 or $75,000.
Okay.
And, you know, that's 6 kids, and it can have a tremendous impact on our budget.
We're going to have additional resources.
And then the LCI on top of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Had a significant impact. And I can, if you want, if you're interested in going through the details, I have spreadsheets. And
yeah, it would be. I don't know. I'd say it'd be interesting, but it'd be insightful. Thank you.
Just a quick question. So, because the facilities piece has changed, and now we have to have a 3% in reserve, so we have this contribution, and we are applying for facilities dollars, which I think were in our plans. Once we get those dollars, do we have to continue to keep that amount of money there? Or if we don't get those dollars, do we have to keep that amount of money there?
The intent behind the county is that the state's giving you money. They want you to keep your facility up to speed much as possible.
And have we gotten any money along that vein yet?
We have not received any modernization money as of yet.
And will we, in that modernization, reapply for the CTE piece again this fall that you presented last year?
We're applying. Mark is helping us with some applications for Harbor and Santa Cruz. So we're applying again for CTE, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. And again, this is just a public hearing tonight. We'll bring it back to you for action. Cindy.
I just would like you to clarify that unrestricted reserve percentage that we talked to before the meeting. Just to clarify for the people who are here, that one page that shows the 2018-19 with the projected reserve, I think that number was an error, the 4.16%.
That's true.
Just to clarify for everybody.
Yeah, I apologize to Casey. And let her know she can call me at home on Sunday because she's the one who caught it. So I apologize. It was not done in Excel, but there's a percentage on that reflected for 18-19 that our reserve was going from 11% to 4%. Mm-hmm. And that was indeed a typo on that page.
But the 4.16 is what we had on the multi-year for 2020.
And that's going to come down a little bit. That's true. That's exactly right. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
Patty.
So I know you spoke briefly at our trustee meeting about the cafeteria fund. And so when I go into the actual budget piece and look into food services, it has how our revenue comes. And it has sales, and then it has breakfast, snack, lunch, breakfast, lunch, cash. The doubles, is that for upper division and lower division? And are these dollars the federal dollars that come in? Anything that's not listed as cash is our federal funding. Is that correct?
Federal and state.
Okay. And then so I know that we offer food during the summer. How do students get that? I know what sites will they have that? And then because it's on our Facebook page. So can you talk to me about that? Because so that students know how to get that. And then also what it does to our costs for, like, a breakdown for summer foods when we don't have a program, like a summer school program there.
You know, Patty, it's a good question. I can get back to you on it because I don't have a lot of detail. Chris may know off the top of my head, but I don't know that.
I know we are offering it at Harbor High, and we have signage out and about for families to know that they can go to Harbor High.
Only Harbor High.
They may be offering it at Bayview as well. I don't know for certain.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't ask that before. But
it's okay.
It's
just a great question. I'll share with everyone.
Okay, so we can have that breakdown. Thank you.
Patty, I'm glad you raised the food service, because if we look at our final agenda, item 8.5.4.1, we have new language, CSV, sample board, policy, business, and non-instructional operations. The governing board intends that school food services shall be a self-supporting nonprofit program, and yet we see in the budget over $500,000 taken from general fund to support our food services. Approximately the same amount, correct me if I'm wrong, it would take to give all employees in the district a 1% raise ongoing. It seems to me that we have to, I believe it was 3 years ago that we were able to cut that by about $250,000, so there was only an encroachment, if you will, of $250,000. it's the other area that I just think we have to get a handle on, because the language is very clear. Shall be, the governing board intends that school food services shall be a self-supporting nonprofit program. But our program is not self-supporting. And so I have a hard time with that, to be honest.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes. Yes.
Which is utilizing the protocol you talk about for advanced planning. I just suggest that we put an item on the agenda in the fall for us to come back to you with suggestions about how we might attain that. And, you know, discussing practical issues and potentially, for lack of better use, political issues, such as we have open campuses on our high schools. And I think that realistically, to make an impact on that contribution, you're going to have a discussion about open campuses versus closed campuses. I think it's a factor.
It's a significant factor. Yeah. When you look at the data on comparing the different school district programs,
right,
and those that are self-sustaining and those that aren't, they have close high school campuses.
Right.
The programs that are self-sustaining they have a captive audience for lunch.
So, just a suggestion, advanced planning. We come back to you with some suggestions about how we might attain it. Maybe some surveying, and we could do some different things.
I'm supposed to. Is it then the will of other board members besides myself to see that on the agenda, just so that we can talk about it openly?
Mm-hmm.
I would.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
So, my comment to that is that we do have to have the conversation, no matter where it lands, because when you are an employee or any part of a district or any organization that has a financial piece that is given to one particular department without the conversation, then it becomes the sacred cow. And that's just not serving anybody.
Can become the sacred cow.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
No other questions? Then I will open the public hearing. And the purpose, again, is for the opportunity for public to provide input on the budget.
Casey Carlson from the Greater Santa Cruz Federation of Teachers. And I just first wanted to comment that I really appreciated our team. Some of our e-board met with Pat and Greg and Molly yesterday. Sandy mentioned I had a complete panic attack this weekend when I saw that the reserve went from 11.55 down to 4.16. So I was glad to know that it didn't go down that far. And we did get a lot of our questions answered when we met yesterday. Of course, we're disappointed that the reserve went down and our questions were answered, and we see the special ed piece in the Prop 51.
Casey, can you talk just a little louder?
Sorry. I'm going to try this.
We can't help but be disappointed, of course, because we have a reopener, and if there was, above 2%, to the positive, which there was 2 weeks ago, we would be going back to the table. And as one of our reps said at our end of the year reps meeting, all we want to do is make enough money so that we can actually live where we work and maybe go on a vacation in the summer. And I know that my new compatriot in the classified union, I don't know if you all know Jean Brown, we share that goal for our members. So we just want to keep that in mind. On this particular presentation, I know I've asked this before, it would be really helpful if we had the screenshots, the slides. I brought our treasurer in training and wonderful math teacher at Soquel, Sarah Rominger, who's a math guru, and she was just saying, you can't really understand this stuff unless you have it in front of you, so I just would like to have that for the members of the public in the future. And the other thing, and I know you can't necessarily answer, so I'll call you later. I thought I heard that just today you heard that the 3% COLA had gone to 3.7.
True.
Okay. But then we heard that the reserve was going down, so I'll have to follow up on that. But I just wanted to say again that I don't think our union has really ever, that I can remember, ever put out, grandiose goals monetarily for ourselves. We've talked a lot about how you retain and attract teachers, and so I just have to say on behalf of our members that we just want everyone to keep that in mind in terms of budget priority and also for our classified sisters and brothers as well. Thanks.
Okay. Anyone else?
Can I add something to it?
No, because this is the...
I want to comment that I, despite the fact that I kept thinking, oh, I know where that is, it is hard without it being up there to keep track. I agree with Casey on that one. You've got so much more than we could have up there, but just the same, it was. We read so much that it was hard to find what I needed to find to ask the question I wanted to ask.
Okay. Close the public hearing. And our next item is the one that was pulled from the consent agenda, 8.3.9. And did you want to address that?
Yeah, Patty, is this one?
Yeah, just the number. Did we add it up the same or near the same?
I came up with 776-936-74. So thank you, Patty, for catching that. Maybe just a minute. Oh, sorry.
Any other questions? Okay, is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Okay. And Sheila? Yes. And any other comments, questions? It's a roll call.
Aye.
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 Thank you. Thank you, Patty.
Great aye.
I love numbers.
Okay, our next item is 8.5.4.1, looking at our board policies.
I didn't get it.
Oh, do we have?
Did it come on your? Mm-hmm. Okay, I did not get mine.
I didn't get board policy.
And I'm sorry, I didn't flip my. So I'm going to have to.
You see, we're in the second book. I mean, did you guys
second book?
I don't know what I do.
Oh, Jeremy, you do have them?
Absolutely. You had yours. Yeah. Well,
okay.
I'm sorry.
God knows.
God knows, because we had three packages. I read the budget. I put it over there.
Okay.
I'm going to have to.
All right.
It was only the last of them.
And we brought back the chart of school. Because Devin asked for more time to think about it.
Yep.
So Sheila and I had some questions regarding the language, but we didn't have time to meet, so we had a little comp out and go through and we're okay with the current language, so we have no further comment unless that
okay.
And that's about the chart.
The chart, yeah. 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 Okay, the 420.2.
Oh, 4.4.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Are there other comments?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm not going to vote for your board policy 3551. It's the board, the food service, because, again, I reiterate, it reads, the governing board intends that school food services shall be a self-supporting nonprofit program. Mm-hmm. So the question is, do we or don't we?
I think the board voted at one time to add to the wellness committee brought forward, and they voted to add to the wellness, to the food service budget from the general fund, but
yeah,
that was years ago.
That's not what our board
says.
Policy reads.
Right.
It's sort of saying
it says,
X and we're doing
well,
Y,
I know,
so
that,
we're in conflict.
I'm just telling you the history.
I understand, but that doesn't
answer the question.
I'd like some direction there in terms of what...
Okay, Deb, go ahead.
Oh, I would just say, the spirit of the language is it intends, and so if we set policy that it's in our intention to do that, then we have a direction to take a look at what we're doing in practice-wise,
mm-hmm.
and meet that policy.
And
so we don't have a policy.
Then you
we're
can't.
We're going to be sausage made for a while and make some.
No,
but
you're right.
But
you're
the
right.
Spirit is to intend, and
okay.
We do intend to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out.
All right,
okay.
And we're going to figure out how and sometime in the fall when it's agendized. And you're right. Thank you.
We'll look at the
fact,
governance
that makes
calendar.
More sense to pass it like this, isn't it? Right.
Mm-hmm. It's the intention.
My bad. That's the intention.
Okay.
Okay,
the intention.
I feel good about that.
Are you making a motion?
I never have before.
It's always the first time.
Sure, I move approval.
Thank you. So I would like to be clear for the record, are you moving final reading and approval for these policies?
For all the policies, actually, we haven't had a, we can, yeah, we can have the move in a second and so
it does. Is this for
well, now
all?
Now I'm utterly confused.
Are you moving approval for the entire slate?
Yes.
And I'm seconding it.
Thank you.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
I'm sorry, were there comments or questions? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain?
I have to abstain. I didn't okay, I don't know what I didn't know. Right. Take the plexus I have here.
I'm
not happy
to
have
seen it. I must have taken mine out.
Gosh. Okay.
Yeah, I just want to apologize. We didn't get future agenda items on this.
Oh, that's right.
On this agenda. It'll be on the 20th. We're going to get it on our on our template.
Once it gets on, it'll be on every meeting. So meeting adjourned, and it's before 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yes. What was it that we didn't get to? In the consent, the closed session.
It was a rear ending of a car.
I have no idea what it is, but we'll accept it for whatever you do.
Oh, great. When I never turned my phone off. How lucky am I? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, thanks for asking.
I went to turn
that
it back
on. That would have been
on.
So embarrassing.
Oh, that would have been terrible.
Excuse me. What? Please. Your phone ringing?
Hi, Nana.
Yes, ma'am?
I didn't.